3. The role of politics. With a hesitation in his step that betrayed his uncomfortable feelings, Jason Solo followed his uncle Luke into the council chamber. Jason knew the new chief of state and his 6 counselors, of course, but his dealings with them had been primarily restricted to social events. This was business, serious business, judging from the tense nature of Luke Skywalker's stride. They had come to Coruscant so that Luke could accept an invitation to address the New Republic Advisory Council concerning his plans to re-establish the Jedi Council, but there was no doubt in Luke's mind that he would face some tough opposition on that matter, even from some counselors he considered his friends. What made it all the worse for Jason was the fact that he hoped his Uncle Luke's opponents proved victorious in this matter. The 6 counselors, Chief of State Borsk Felya in the middle, sat at a semicircular table facing the doorway. 2 chairs had been set before the long table. Down lower, Jason noted, and it seemed to him a rather thinly veiled attempt to elevate the stature of the counselors above their invited guests. In this particular instance, that seemed utterly ridiculous, especially in the case of Borsk Felya. Jason had been with his uncle Luke and his mother, Leia, when the news had come through that Borsk, as the longest-serving member of the council, the elder statesman of the New Republic, had been elected chief of state, a position the conniving Bothan no doubt relished. Just a few years before, Borsk had escaped a lengthy prison sentence only through a generous pardon. Ever was he the consummate politician who leaked information to weaken his opponents, once nearly unseating Leia as chief of state with damaging and ultimately untrue allegations. Despite getting caught in such an unseemly situation, Borsk, as always, found a way to land on his own political feet. He had climbed within a handbreadth of the top, serving the council as chief of state, Mon Mothma's trusted advisor, and then he had crashed to the bottom, facing charges that could have landed him in prison, or even, if the charge of treason had been pushed, a sentence of permanent exile. And yet here he was again, lingering on like the Fendris flu, seated between a new generation of counselors who looked upon him as an age-wizened statesman and hero of the New Republic. On the day when the news of his latest ascension had come down, Jason's mother had honestly wondered if she had done right in resigning as chief of state. Leia had even openly remarked she might go back into politics. It was Luke who had dissuaded her, reminding her that more than the mood of the government had changed greatly in the years since she had resigned, that familiar and friendly faces had walked away. Even respected and dutiful Admirals Drayson and Akbar had taken the apparent firming of the New Republic as their signal to retire, and neither had shown any inclination to remain politically active. As Borsk called the meeting to order, offering a polite recitation of the agenda and a welcome to their guests, Jason looked around at the members, viewing their respective expressions in light of the information his Uncle Luke had given him regarding their positions toward Luke and the proposed Jedi Council. At the far end, to Jason's right, sat Niuk Niuv of Sullust. With his Sullustan features, the oversized rounded ears and ample jowls, Niuk Niuv appeared more like a child's cuddle toy than a counselor. But Jason knew Sullustans better than that, knew that they could be steadfast allies and dangerous foes. Niuk Niuv, according to Luke, would be among his most vocal detractors. Next to Niuk Niuv sat Cal Omis of Alderaan, a man sympathetic to Luke's plans, possibly Luke's strongest ally on the council. After his homeworld had been destroyed by the Empire, Cal Omis had fought with the Rebel Alliance through all the trials, and he knew well the value of the Jedi. The Wookiee Trebok, another potential ally for Luke, sat between Cal and Borsk, but the squid-headed creature on Borsk's other side, the Quarren, Pwo, was perhaps Luke's greatest enemy of the group. Dour, like most of his water-dwelling brethren of Mon Calamari, Pwo was the first Quarren ever to serve on the Advisory Council, and certainly an unexpected choice. The planet of Mon Calamari would, of course, always hold a seat, since their star cruisers and their support had proven so valuable in overthrowing the Empire and establishing the New Republic. But always before, and it was commonly assumed that the tradition would continue in perpetuity, it had been a Mon Calamarian and not a Quarren to serve on the Council. Indeed, Admiral Akbar had seen the logical choice to represent Mon Calamari on the Advisory Council, as he had done back when the first Provisional Council was formed. But when the push for Pwo, a push Luke suspected orchestrated by Borsk, had become serious, Akbar had waved away all thoughts of rejoining the Council and had retired. The remaining two members were both human, Fjor Rodand of Kaminor and Chelch Dravid of Corellia. It was Fjor Rodan who had requested Luke at Council, Jason knew, and according to his uncle, Rodan was no friend and not to be trusted. With all of that in mind, with all the insights Luke had given him about these counselors, Jason sat back and observed very carefully. After the somewhat hypocritical pleasantries and formalities that seemed to Jason to go on, Borsk Felya looked Luke right in the eye and asked in the gravest of tones, "You have heard the initial reports from the mediator? Leia will be meeting with Nom Anor soon, I am told," Luke replied, avoiding the obvious. "A meeting complicated already," Borsk said. "Would all counselors who are surprised please raise their hands," Fjor Rodan put in. And even to 16-year-old Jason, his sarcasm seemed rather juvenile and certainly out of place in the somber hall. "I heard of the intervention," Luke admitted. "The Osarians were wrong to try to intercept a New Republic envoy," Cal Omis remarked. "A convenient excuse for our Jedi hero to rush to the rescue," Fjor Rodan shot back. "Quick to the trigger they are," Pwo said, his accusing stare falling over Luke. Jason could hardly believe the lack of respect and the obvious thinly masked intentions behind it all. The New Republic was having growing pains, with minor squabbles erupting throughout the galaxy, many of them age-old conflicts that had been buried under the blanket of the Empire for years and years, but now, with the new freedoms afforded to individual planets and species, rising up once again. So, of course, the New Republic and its counselors and representatives had been taking many verbal hits of late, as had the Jedi Knights, and thus the finger-pointing between the two groups had escalated. On it went, one recounting after another of a civil war here, a vendetta there, grievances from one agriculture planet, and a workers' strike that had spread to several mining planets, with even the Wookiee Treebok howling out some complaints at Pwo about a failure in one of the nav systems on the newest Mon Calamari battlecruisers. It all seemed like so much nonsense to Jason, a bunch of talking heads full of complaints and short on solutions, and yet another reminder of his fears concerning his uncle's schemes for enacting some control over the Jedi. He tuned right out of the meeting for many minutes, falling into some silent meditative techniques he had been trying to perfect, until Borsk again looked Luke in the eye and bluntly asked him his plans concerning the Jedi Council. Luke paused for a long while. "I haven't made any final decision," he replied, which took Jason somewhat by surprise, since his uncle had seemed fairly certain that he would indeed re-establish the Council. "Whether with Council or by yourself, you must rein in these wandering Jedi," Counselor Niuk Niuv said with uncustomary passion. Treebok howled in protest, and Cal Omis gave words to the sentiment. "Rein in?" he echoed incredulously. "Need I remind you that you speak of the Jedi Knights?" "A dangerous group," Counselor Pwo remarked gravely, the watery essence of his voice only adding weight to the statement. "Causing disturbances throughout the galaxy," Fjor Rodan was quick to add. Jason noted that his uncle was watching the quietest member of the Council, Chelch of Corellia, one he believed might be the swing vote on any resolutions concerning the Jedi, and one who was now giving no outward hint whatsoever of his intentions. Why, I have heard of battles along the Outer Rim as far out as the Anger System. Fjor Rodan went on, standing up and waving his fist. Jedi swooping in, torpedoes flying against innocent citizens. Smugglers, you mean, Cal Omus retorted. Many who aided in the overthrow of the Empire, Fjor Rodan shot back. And you take that as an excuse for their current illegal activities? The Jedi Knights are not the law, Niuk Niuv pointed out. So they should be told, Fjor Rodan said. Chief Failia, perhaps we should consider a resolution against the Jedi. A strong statement from this council demanding that they end all policing efforts that have not been explicitly authorized by this council or by regional ambassadors. Borsk Failia turned to meet Luke's stern gaze, blanched, and rubbed his hairy face. Let us not be premature, he said. Jason did not miss how the Bothan seemed to shrink back from his Uncle Luke's powerful presence. Premature? Fjor Rodan echoed with a laugh. These wild ones have become a bit inflated concerning the policy-making role of the New Republic. Are we to tolerate that? Are we to deny their help in those areas where they are best qualified? Cal Omas retorted angrily, bringing a derisive snort from Fjor Rodan, a shout of agreement from Trebok, a groan from Pwo, and a stream of retorts from the ever more impassioned Niuk Niuv. And so the shouting began again at new heights, and Jason quickly backed away from it all. The Jedi, it seemed, were to be judged on every move, and by people who, in Jason's estimation, had no right to judge them. He and Luke left the council chamber a short while later, the war of words, about nothing and everything all at once, raging behind them. To Jason's surprise, Luke was wearing a satisfied smile. Both Fjor Rodan and Niuk Niuv tipped their hands in the last part of the exchange, he explained to the obviously confused Jason. With the smugglers? Luke nodded and smiled. You think they're tied to smugglers? Jason asked incredulously. It's not so uncommon, Luke said. Ask your father, he added with a grin that set Jason back on his heels. The roots of Han Solo were no secret to the young man. So you think their complaints about the Jedi have to do with their own profits? Jason asked. You think some of the counselors are working with smugglers, that some Jedi are giving a hard time? Luke shrugged. I don't know that, he admitted, but it seems to fit. And what are you going to do about it? Luke stopped. Jason did too, the pair turning to face each other directly. We have 100 Jedi Knights setting their own agendas throughout the galaxy, Luke explained. That is the problem. You don't think these Jedi at the Outer Rim are justified in going after smugglers? Jason asked. That's not the point, Luke replied. Not at all. The point is that the scattering of Jedi Knights prevents any cohesive movements. Jason's gaze seemed distant, as if Luke had just lost him. We have Worth Skidder acting foolishly defending Mara's shuttle, and the Osarians over here. Other Jedi apparently going after smugglers with a vengeance at the Outer Rim, and I've heard stories of still other problems in other sectors. Luke explained. It's hard to keep up with it all, and sometimes it feels like I'm fixing symptoms without ever getting to the real disease. His choice of words gave Jason pause, and Luke, too, when he thought about them in the context of his wife. That's why we need the Jedi Council, Luke pressed on a moment later. A singular purpose and direction. Is that what it means to be a Jedi Knight? Jason asked bluntly, a question Luke had been hearing many times in the last few months. From Jason, and not from his other apprentice, Jason's younger brother, Anakin. Why do you care what the counselors think? Jason asked, as much to change the subject as out of true curiosity. You don't need them to reestablish a Jedi Council. Why would you want anything from them and their foolish arguing? I don't need them, Luke admitted. The Jedi, despite what Fjor Rodan and Niuk Niuv and even Borsk Failia might think, don't answer to the Council. But if I don't have their agreement in this matter, my plans, as I develop them, both for the Academy and for the Jedi Council, might prove more difficult to implement, at least in the public relations department. You learn to play along, Jason. That's the game called diplomacy. But that was just the point, Jason thought, though he kept it to himself. Any formalities concerning the Jedi, from the Academy to any new councils, seemed to him to be layers of bureaucracy added to something spiritual and personal, something that should not be governed. In Jason's idealistic 16-year-old eyes, the individual Jedi Knights, by their mere acceptance of the philosophy necessary to sustain their force powers, should be self-governing. A properly trained Jedi Knight, who had been taught to avoid the dark side, who proved he could resist the temptations associated with such power, needed no bureaucrats to guide his actions, and putting that governing layer there, he feared, would steal the mystery. "We know that Rodan and Niuk-Niuv are against us," Luke went on, walking again as he spoke. "I doubt that Po will be receptive to anything that he feels will threaten the power of his position. The Quarrens have waited a long time for a seat on the council. Trebak will be with me on whatever I decide, as will Cal Omis, who learned long ago to trust me in the Jedi. That makes Chelch Dravid the key vote. And I think I'll have him if I can answer the concerns of some of these problems that Rodan and Niuk-Niuv are pushing." "What about Counselor Faelya?" Jason asked. Luke waved his hand as if the Bothan was irrelevant. "Borsk wants whatever is best for Borsk," he explained. "If Chelch goes over to side with Rodan and his group, making it 4-2 against me, then Borsk will back them. But if the others are split 3-3, Borsk will lead them either to inaction, not wanting to risk a fight with me and Leia, or he'll back us, hoping we'll return the favor." "Mom would never back Borsk for anything," Jason said dryly, and Luke didn't disagree. "Borsk Faelya would be a fool to think that she would." "He lives in a world where alliances shift by the moment," Luke explained. "Borsk does what Borsk needs to do at any given moment to benefit Borsk, and he's so jaded by that personal philosophy that he thinks everyone else plays by the same rules." Now it was Jason's turn to come to an abrupt halt. "And these are the people you want to please?" he asked skeptically. "These are the people you seek to emulate with your own counsel?" "Of course not," Luke replied, taken aback. "But that's what will happen," Jason argued. Luke stared at him long and hard, and Jason more than met that stare. They had been around this route so many times of late, without resolution. The paradoxes within Jason's own mind kept him somewhat impotent against his uncle. Jason had been trained as a Jedi Knight at the Academy, yet he had become convinced that the Academy was not a good thing, that it was too formal and structured, and that growth within the Force was a much more personal experience. Actually, though the Academy remained, Luke had come to somewhat agree with that perspective. He felt that the Academy had been a necessary stepping stone back to the old ways, where Jedi Knights in training worked with Masters one-on-one, as Jaina was with Mara, and Jason and Anakin were with him. This arrangement would not have been possible before now, for Luke had long been the only Jedi close to attaining the status of Master. Now there were others, and the old ways were being rediscovered, a process that Luke understood would take some time. Still, Jason had begged his uncle to go further and faster, to bring the Jedi back to the one master, one student model of old, but to improve even upon that model. Instead of finding force-strong youngsters to train in the ways of the Jedi, Jason wanted such promising students to find their way to the Jedi. Luke thought his arguments a play of semantics, but to Jason they went much deeper. They went to the core of what it was to be a Jedi Knight. "I have not even put my ideas on solid footing yet," Luke said. And Jason knew that to be as polite a reply and as much a concession as he would ever get. He knew what it was that his uncle feared. The force-strong potential Jedi Knights might be ensnared by the dark side before they ever found their way to the Jedi Masters. But still, to Jason, this internal strength in the Force remained a personal thing and, ultimately, a personal choice. They said no more as they left the Senate building, making their way down to the docks where Han, Anakin, and Chewbacca were working on the Millennium Falcon.